Welcome. You are listening to the Park Avenue Synagogue podcast, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's better to hear it live, this is the place to catch the latest sermon, conversation, and select program. If you like what you're hearing or want to learn more about our community, check out PASYN.org. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to get a notification for our next episode. Enjoy and see you in shul. Shabbat shalom. Like the perforated grooves that are stamped onto every piece of matzah, Passover Seders expose the fault lines within the Jewish family, and by extension, the Jewish people. Just 2 days from now, young and old, liberal and conservative, politically left and right, will sit down for our annual intergenerational gatherings. The gravitational pull of the tradition, law, and nostalgia bringing us together for an evening of family dynamics, debate, dysfunction, on steroids. It may be the questions of the Haggadah that we are asking, but at stake in truth, we know it is deeper questions of meaning, who we are, what we stand for, and how we all fit in to the larger story of the Jewish people. This year, over 6 months since the brutal attacks of October 7th and Israel's war with Hamas, our Seder tables will be more charged than ever. As I've spoken to congregants these last few weeks, it's not just recipes and rituals and travel plans that are being discussed, but anxieties over what the dinner conversation is going to be like. In some cases, whether people are even willing to sit at the table one with another. Just the other night, a congregant shared with me that his college niece was announced this year that for political reasons, she would rather not join. He also related the backroom family discussions that maybe, given the niece's politics, she shouldn't. On the one hand, there are those Jews whose focus understandably remains on the atrocities of October 7th, on lives murdered and massacred, on the orphaned and the widowed, on the hundreds of thousands of internally displaced Israelis, the ones who don't get to come home for Passover. For those Jews, our prayers, our advocacy remains with the hostages' ghastly thoughts of captives being subjected to torture and serial rape. How many are still alive, and if they are, what alive actually means? It has been just a week since Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel, prompting questions of what steps Israel must take in response to a variety of Iranian-driven doomsday scenarios. The well-being of Israel, the well-being of our IDF soldiers, the well-being of our college kids on campus, a subject to which I'll return. For many Seder participants this year, the tribal instinct is activated. The shields are up and the wagons are circled. On the other hand, there are those Jews whose focus is, understandably, elsewhere. Aware as they may be of the attacks of October 7th and the Iranian threat, not to mention Hamas's cruel use of innocents as human shields, they see the gruesome images emanating from Gaza and they openly wonder, at what cost of human life is war justified? Tens of thousands of Gazans have been killed and far more injured, displaced, and suffering from disease and hunger. Since October 7th, there has been a surge of extremist settler violence in the West Bank. These Jews harbor, as does half the Israeli electorate, profound misgivings about Israel's present government. The years of decisions leading up to this moment, the politics of division preceding October 7th, the catastrophic failures of October 7th itself, the lack of leadership since October 7th. loving Jews, proud Zionists who openly question, as all thoughtful people should, the choices being made for today and tomorrow, questions of proportionality, of justice, of the wisdom of policies problematic both in the short term and long term, in that they are bound to sow seeds of violent extremism into the next generation. As one college-age product of this congregation asked me the other week, Rabbi, just how many Palestinians need to die before I walk away from Israel altogether? These questions may or may not be voiced at your table on Monday night, but they are, I assure you, being asked at the larger figurative table of the people of Israel. Questions that might be prompted by the latest headlines, but extend way back and into the core of our being. Can we advocate on behalf of Israel and express compassion for Palestinians? Is it possible to mourn both the loss of Israeli and Palestinian life? Are we a people of empathy or of vigilance, compassion or vengeance? The questions run to the foundation of who we are and who in this critical hour it is that we seek to be. Today is Shabbat HaGadol, the Sabbath immediately preceding Passover. The rabbi's sermon is traditionally given over to thoughts of the Haggadah with the hope that everyone leaves here with a new way to think about the familiar Seder and story and ritual. This morning, in this charged moment, I want to suggest to you that the Passover Haggadah is precisely the right text for such a time as this. Far more than an account of ancient Israel's journey from slavery to freedom, the Haggadah provides us with the tools to openly name and wrestle with the tensions that we face. The rituals of the Seder embrace the complexities of the Jewish soul, nearly every symbol carrying with it more than one interpretive possibility. Think about it. Let's start with the matzah. Is it a symbol of slavery or of freedom? On the one hand, we hold it up and call it the poor man's bread or the bread of affliction, a reminder of our slavery. On the other hand, of course, it's a reminder of our freedom, the haste by which we left Egypt that the bread didn't have time to rise. Oppression or freedom? The answer is both. What about the salt water? Does it symbolize the tears shed by the Israelites in their servitude? Or does it signify the luxuriant act of dipping our greens, something only a free person may do? Persecuted or privileged? The answer is both. What about the charoset? Does it represent the mortar used by the embittered Israelite slaves in their pyramid brick building? Or is it the means to sweeten the sting of the bitter herb? Bitter or sweet? The answer is both. Enslaved and free, persecuted and privileged, traumatized and Dayenu grateful, the enduring power of the Haggadah is that it resists binaries and rejects the either or. Depending on the year, depending on the person, we sit down at the Seder and allow for a multitude of interpretive meanings, as many and diverse as a Jewish people. And to our present challenge of whether we are a people of empathy or of vigilance, compassion or vengeance, the Haggadah again is particularly instructive. Again, think about it. When we begin the Seder, we do it with a wide and warm embrace. Halach ma'anya. All who are hungry, let them come and eat. All who are needy, let them celebrate with us. And yet, towards the Seder's conclusion, when we welcome Elijah, we don't do so with a spirit of ecumenical inclusion, but with a spite-filled melange of biblical verses called Shvach Hamatcha, a petition that God pours out the divine wrath on the nations. A spirit of inclusion hand in hand with a fear and even hatred of the other. Another example. On the one hand, the whole point of Passover is to recall that we were once strangers in a strange land, to see ourselves as if we ourselves left Egypt, an exercise important unto itself, but also as a prompt for present empathy, that we must know the heart of the strangers, the marginalized and alienated of our present. On the other hand, the take-home message of one of the Haggadah's central declarations, V'hi She'amda, is that in every generation, an enemy has arisen to destroy us. Pharaoh was the first, but by no means the last, in a long line of anti-Semitic oppressors. Empathetic, sure, but Jews must also be vigilant and on guard. There's always another Pharaoh right around the corner. Growing up, I was always deeply impressed at the point in the Seder when just before we recited the 10 plagues, we dipped our fingers into the cups and removed drops of wine, one drop for each cup, each plague. While there are those who may interpret this act as savoring the power of God's vengeance, I was always taught that the gesture is meant to remind us that even though the Egyptians enslaved us and even though the plagues were necessary for our liberation, we are still saddened at the thought of Egyptian suffering, the cup of our redemption made less full in our awareness of the casualties suffered by our oppressors. So too, in our home, we always read the Talmudic passage describing the Egyptian pursuit of the fleeing Israelites and how they drowned at sea. When the heavenly angels broke out in song at the downfall of the Israelite oppressors, God reprimanded them. My handiwork, meaning the Egyptians, are drowning in the sea, and you, angels, want to sing songs of praise? All of humanity is God's creation. God's empathy, and by extension our own, must extend to friend and foe alike. There are, I am sure, other examples, but the point is one and the same. It's not either or. Empathy and vigilance, compassion and vengeance, they're not contradictions. If anything, they're interdependent, woven into the spine of every Haggadah. Taking time to mourn others neither weakens the strength of our cause nor negates our resolve. We can and we must demonstrate both. They're impulses that are present long before the events of this year, strands of identity that trace back arguably to our very beginning, the double helix of our Jewish DNA. Every year, but especially and urgently this year, our Passover Seders need to name and affirm these multiple threads laced into the tapestry of our people. No matter how one feels about the war, determined, angry, ambivalent, depressed, we should all be able to agree that the loss of civilian life is something that we can take a moment to mourn. We need not get defensive or get bogged down in semantic debates as to what does or does not constitute genocide in order to acknowledge the obvious fact that lives on both sides have been lost. Expressions of empathy for innocent Palestinians are not betrayals of the cause, but just the opposite. They affirm the essence of who we are. And I know, given what's going on around this country, it isn't easy to express empathy for the other side. At Columbia University, at my alma mater, the University of Michigan, at so many campuses, Jewish students are feeling isolated, excluded, and physically threatened. Universities have lost their ability to articulate the norms for the free exchange of ideas, arguably their very reason for existence, for communicating those norms, and for enforcing those norms when they are in breach. With graduation season around the corner, I am deeply worried about the chaos coming to campus convocations in the weeks ahead. And yes, if you, by dint of your connection to either your alma mater or that of where your child is studying, is positioned to call on administrators to take preemptive steps to do what needs to be done to make sure graduation ceremonies reflect the ideals of their schools, then now, before you sit down for Seder, is a time to make your voice heard. And given this backdrop of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, given a world of mass protesters choosing disruption over dialogue, aggression over free expression, I know there are undoubtedly those present in this room who are asking if right now is really the time to give voice to empathy, to engage with the counter-arguments of the other side, to have our views interrogated at our very own dinner table. I imagine someone here thinking, Rabbi, it's not like the other side is sitting down thinking about our sorrow, our fear, our pain. In a world that is so hostile to us and our interests, can't we have just one night when we're right and they're wrong? And while I hear the sentiment, and truth be told, often feel it myself, the call of the Seder demands that we rise above it. The Seder is an opportunity to show our guests, our children, and our grandchildren what a culture of dialogue should actually look like. The whole point of the Seder is to teach that two people can read the same Haggadah, can perform the same rituals, one filled with vigilance and the other empathy, and they both know that they belong. Both may affirm the strength of their views, seeing it expressed in the Haggadah. Both have to concede the strength of the other view, seeing it expressed in the Haggadah. Most of all, both must find the intellectual and emotional wherewithal to acknowledge the views of the other in light of their own. It is really, really important that your Seder models the world not as it is, but as it ought to be. And as a parent of four college-age kids, I believe that the most damaging thing we can do to our children is to leave them with the impression that their homes suffer from the same toxic ideological straitjacketing as do their schools. What does this mean in practical terms? Well, if the condition of the Palestinians stands at the forefront of your concern, this Passover, push yourself to find a way to give voice to Israel's right to self-defense and self-determination. And if it is the continued defense and well-being of Israel that informs your every breath, then model for all those present how you can stay true to your principles and express empathy for Palestinian suffering. The horrors of October 7th will forever be a scar on the Jewish soul. The return of the hostages remains at the forefront of our concern, as does the well-being of Israel. Family is family, but a good family, a great family, I think to which we all aspire to be, figures out a way to make sure every voice is heard, even and especially the ones with whom we differ. If we cannot share our hopes and fears with those we know and love, there is little chance we will be able to do so as a global Jewish community. With so much at stake this year, our Seder conversations should serve to bring us closer together. Isn't that ultimately the real message of Passover? Every participant, an equal stakeholder, with a place, literally and figuratively, at the table. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for listening to the Park Avenue Synagogue podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more about our community, check out PASYN.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.